Hello, I'm Carrie Brandis. This is number 0425, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0425. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Rhonda Shear, best known as the host of USA Up All Night. She now has a book out that shares her story, her business sense, and her early days in Hollywood.
I didn't have friends when I moved to Hollywood to act and to do stand-up comedy. And I didn't have a family that was in the business. I just went out there on my own as a young girl. I learned to use what was God-given. I mean, I had the figure that I was born with. There was no getting around that. And so people immediately assume that you're that type of girl. And they can get you into compromising situations and promise you things. So I learned how to beat that system and use what I had, but without ever compromising who I was or my values.
Jim Hines is the author of A Century of NHL Memories, Rare Photos from the Hockey Hall of Fame.
We always kept in mind that there's 100 years to cover here, and even though a lot of the selection and a lot of the striking stuff is old, we wanted to have a mix of the old and the new, and what we did was break this into themes so that this would be a little bit more manageable. So we broke it into 10 themes or 10 chapters, and then we picked from those what we thought were the best ones. We really focused on photos people have never seen before.
Mark Abrams is back to talk about the 2017 edition of the Ig Nobel Awards. This year's award for physics probed the question, can a cat be both a solid and a liquid?
This is a physics professor in France, and he saw a remark somewhere, somebody saying that cats really can be a liquid. And he started thinking about it, and he realized that for people who work in great detail trying to make sense of liquids and solids and all kinds of things, that there's a certain amount of truth there. And once you start looking at things that way, you can get a lot of insight into liquids and solids and what it means to flow.
And of course, we have lots and lots of Stuff File news and an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0425 was Carrie Brandis, who is a retail thought leader here in Montreal. He has a blog on retailing that you'll find at renegaderetailer.blog. You'll also find the link on our website at thestufffile.com. And by the way, he will be a special guest presenter next May at the Retail Talent Summit, which is taking place in Niagara Falls. You'll also find that link on our website at thestufffile.com. Thank you very much, Carrie, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that is also listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. So join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A 6-year-old girl jumped into a stranger's car trying to hide, then ran into a stranger's apartment in Youngstown, Ohio, screaming that a clown was chasing her. A man in the apartment ran outside with a gun to confront the horror and fired a warning shot into the ground. That, of course, brought police, who found the clown. It was the girl's father who allegedly told officers he put on the clown mask and chased her to discipline her instead of spanking her. The unnamed parent was charged with child endangering and inducing panic, while the man who fired the gun was charged with using weapons while intoxicated. Of course, he was intoxicated. Aren't they always in these stories? If he were smoking, he would have hit the trifecta: alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Okay, so as for the 6-year-old, jumping into the car was dangerous. I mean, there could have been 100 clowns in there. Bet you she'll now develop a fear of McDonald's. Yeah. Anyway, a woman who could not afford meals at restaurants put glass in her food and cut her lips to avoid paying. Stewart Police Department in Florida have arrested 31-year-old Caitlin Murphy after being accused of defrauding at least 11 restaurants in recent weeks. According to the police investigation, Murphy carried glass in her purse and used it to put in her food while eating at restaurants. She also cut her lips before telling the managers that she found glass in her food. The establishments canceled her charge and allowed her to eat for free. Some establishments even provided her with free vouchers. Her crime came to light when one restaurant posted Murphy's story on their Facebook page. And I gotta ask right off the bat, why would a restaurant post a story on their own page about someone finding glass in their food in that restaurant? It's not something you really want to advertise, but I digress. Anyway, it's actually a good thing that they posted that story because other restaurant managers then posted comments that they had similar stories recently. During questioning, Murphy told police that she did this because she could not afford the meals. She was booked at the Martin County Jail, and her bail was set at $5,000. Well, I'm guessing then that she also can't afford her bail. It's a good thing that for now, her meals for the next little while will all be for free. Police in Leesburg, Florida responded to a fight in progress and indeed found five men in a parking lot shirtless and sweating. The men refused to be detained by officers and walked away, but backup units arrived and corralled them. Four were given a warning, but the fifth refused to identify himself. He said his given name was Kayden, that's K-A-Y-D-E-N, and his last name matched the capital of Montana. When a computer search for Kayden Helena failed to find anyone, the man was arrested on a charge of falsely identifying himself. That's when he gave in. He is 19-year-old Kayden Billings. It should be noted, Officer Kyler Hobbs wrote in his arrest report, that Billings is a major city in the state of Montana, but is not the capital. So, I guess Kayden would be charged with some sort of minor offense, but his geographical ignorance could be considered a capital crime. Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, "This is just nasty," said Forrest Joey Tinklepaw, the owner of Joey the Jeweler in Crestview, Florida. The store's security camera picked up a man who went behind the store, dropped his pants, and defecated between two cars in broad daylight. Tinklepaw didn't just call the police. He also posted the video to Facebook in hopes of identifying the suspect. Facebook fans of the shop dubbed the still unidentified culprit Crapper Man. Police Chief Tony Taylor is treating the report seriously and is working to identify Crapper Man. This is the quote of the day from the police chief, who might not be aware of the irony of his comments. "Incidents like these have a negative effect on the quality of life in our community," Taylor said. "It's just downright shameful when people don't give a crap about their town. It really stinks." No, folks, that's his actual quote. Okay, I have to pause here for a second to ask, what's this world coming to? I've been doing a variation of Stuff File News for almost 30 years now. Back when I started, these freaky stories weren't as plentiful as they are now, and writing punchlines for these actual news stories was the fun part of my day. But seriously, sometimes it's really difficult to add anything to a story beyond the straight facts. They are becoming just too weird for their own merits alone. We are living in frightening times. It's like we've all followed Alice down the rabbit hole. And by the way, notice I didn't even zone in on the name of the jeweler who filed the complaint. I mean, think about it. A guy named Tinklepaw reports someone else defecating? Really? I mean, it's almost too easy. Wow. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? For many people, Rhonda Shear will best be remembered as everyone's favorite late-night bedtime smart, sexy hostess of USA Up All Night, but what you probably didn't know is that she now runs a $100 million lingerie company called Shear Enterprises and has been a fixture on HSN Home Shopping Network for years. Rhonda has written a book entitled Up All Night, From Hollywood Bombshell to Lingerie Mogul, Life Lessons from an Accidental Feminist. And Rhonda joins us on the line right now from Florida. Hi, Rhonda.
Thank you. Thank you for that great intro, too. It pretty much sums up my life.
Well, speaking of the intro and speaking of the book title, I want to ask about the subtitle of the book first. You call yourself an accidental feminist. What does that mean to you?
Well, you know what it means is that I was in Hollywood doing, I like to kid and call it the Bill Cosby era, when pretty much there was no sexual harassment. If people, you know, pretty much you were hit on and the casting couch was alive and well, I'm sure it still is. But if you were to say anything back then, you would be blackballed from the system. So, you know, I didn't have friends when I moved to Hollywood to act and to do stand-up comedy. And I mean, I didn't have a family that was in the business. I just went out there on my own as a young girl. So I had to, I mean, luckily I had family who really prepared me and maybe scared me a bit for what can happen in the big bad world. But with that, I learned to use what was God-given. I mean, I had this figure that I was born with. There was no getting around that. And so people immediately assume that you're that type of girl and they can get you into compromising situations and promise you things. So I learned how to beat that system and use what I had, but without ever compromising who I was or my values. And so that's where I kid about the accidental feminist. And I pretty much have used that throughout my life, even in my other industries, you know, because, once I was cast on USA Up All Night, I went with the image. Because at that point I was doing stand-up comedy. Instead of fighting this sexy image that I had been given, I went with it and then I used it. So I got typecast a bit after that. But then, always that character, the character of Rhonda was self-deprecating and smarter. I mean, if you just happen to buy her, you would just go, oh, look at the way she's dressed. She's a bimbo. But if you really listened to the character, you knew that we were saying and doing some pretty smart things on the network in the 90s, the early days of cable. So I've just continued to use that. And then all of a sudden, I reunite with my junior high school sweetheart, Dan Fagan, through classmates.com, was not looking for him. And this was 17 years ago. We literally eloped in 15 days. I'm just giving you the short version. And he was living in South Louisiana as a businessman. I was living in Hollywood. We didn't really think through it, but we used his business smarts, and something I had always wanted to do was create a line of apparel for women that was comfortable and that everybody would love. So that's what we did, and we never realized that it would blow up. It, of course, hard work. And dedication and sacrifice, but we never realized that it would blow up to the level that it did. But it was just great partnership and really putting a stake in it and going for it and not giving up.
Now, let me go a step back, because you mentioned that you had this image almost being typecast as to who you were and what you were. And you said you fought that all along until you got to Up All Night. What made you finally say, you know what, I'm going to ride this wave rather than trying to swim against it?
Well, you know what happened really and truly was I started doing stand-up in the 80s, and no one really knew what to do with me at that point, because you had the Roseanne Barrs out there and the Paula Poundstones, and everybody was kind of doing a certain, self-deprecating or male-bashing, or, incredible women, female, but no one was going for this. Who they really were, and I was really trying to find myself on stage and find my true voice. So I started wearing short skirts, and I was getting laughs, but managers and agents had no idea what to do with me. They were like, who is this person? So slowly but surely, I climbed the stand-up comedy ladder on my own terms, headlining in clubs that I don't think anybody thought I would get. And initially, the money wasn't great. But then once so what happened is I auditioned for Up All Night, and that came along. And then once I got that, my money in the clubs blew up in terms of the headliner. But they still didn't know what to do with me. And this is before the Jenny McCarthy's and the Amy Schumer, long before any of these gals came along, where people just weren't doing a sassier, self-deprecating, but not male bashing. I talked about getting the guy instead of not getting the guy. So it was just a little ahead of itself. So when I auditioned for Up All Night, I decided I am so tired of fighting this that I'm going to go to this audition, which they asked for a host, a host. So you think of a host back then, you think of a newscaster or a businesswoman. I went in like really sexy, over the top, and I got it. I took a shot at like just going against you know, what I thought everybody else was doing. I mean, it was definitely a shot, but, you know, I had nothing to lose by this point. You know, I was in my early 30s. I played against type, not working so well. So no one knew what to do with me anyway. So I was groundbreaking in my own way and doing things that, and I think that the book says that pretty much the whole book is that I did things my whole life that people told me I shouldn't do, I couldn't do. I got to Hollywood. You're too pretty to be funny. You're too sexy to be funny. Your face moves like this. It's your mouth moves weird when you talk. So you'll never be the star. You'll be like, you know, I just was told, I ran for public office in New Orleans. I was like the youngest and first woman to ever run down there. And I was told you can't do that. So I think I got so fed up with hearing things I couldn't do my whole life that I went, I'm doing it. I'll do it on my own terms and we'll see what happens. And even with this industry, when my husband and I reunited 17 years ago and we started in the fashion industry, it's a really hard business to start in. I mean, he had great business knowledge where mine was marketing and, you know, marketing myself, but I had the fashion sense. And it was definitely our partnership in this one. This was not one I could have done alone.
Well, let's flash forward. Let's flash forward to the business since you just mentioned it. You have the number one selling bra worldwide.
I know.
Did you ever? did you ever think that would be possible?
No. And so invention's a really interesting thing. I think invention comes out of things that you need for yourself. So my ever changing body, and apparently I was known for, I'm going to admit it, my blood size on up all night. I mean, I kind of used it. I didn't play against it. So, but no doubt wearing those clothing that I wore on the show, they weren't the most comfortable. So I had always made a decision that one day I wanted to design a more comfortable line for my, and I just started doing it. And my husband had the wherewithal business-wise to put it together. And then we reached out to Home Shopping Network in almost 17 years ago. And a little bit of luck that they were looking for someone in our category, and they knew me from Up All Night, and they gave me, you know, because they do have celebrities. Cindy Lauper starting there this week. I'm like so excited about that. But you know, they gave me a shot, and lo and behold, my candidness and my design just literally took off. So it was definitely a lot of luck, but hard work too, because when we first started, no one wanted to lend us any money. No way. We didn't have a background in the fashion industry. We had to just literally pour our own funds in, our very meager funds, back into our business and believed in ourselves and just ate really very lean until things started, you know, just kept pouring it back in. And next thing you knew, this bra took off and started winning major awards internationally and then was picked. 35 million women have bought this bra worldwide.
Wow. Now, your book, which is just out, Up All Night, and again, the subtitle, From Hollywood Bombshell to Lingerie Mogul, Life Lessons from an Accidental Feminist. What made you decide to write this book now, and to whom are you actually writing it to? Is it the young woman who wants to go into life in Hollywood? Is it the young person who wants to become a mogul themselves? And is it a book that you think would be as enticing for men to read as it is for women?
Sorry about my puppies that are barking. Okay. Yes, I think it's all of the above. I wanted to hit all of those above people because it is about finding love later in life after 45 my first true love. It is finding a business that's successful later in life. It was going to Hollywood when I was told, you know, that at a time where I was told it's impossible. So it does reach out to men. I've had many men read it. Actually, a really good friend of mine who's a huge businessman out of actually Toronto, he said he stayed up all night reading the book, and he said, I love your lessons because they work for businessmen or anybody who's trying to succeed in a business or even a new love. Or it's just lessons of pushing. I mean, I think we've all heard these stories, you know, to push and never stop. But as I write the book, I talk about, like, it's the bubble over my head. What am I really thinking in these moments? You know, like, here I am, I'm posing for Playboy. What am I really thinking? Am I really comfortable with it? No, but I'm going to use this moment to perhaps push my career ahead, which I did use back in those days. And even now, what was it like when I first got to HSN? And it was, you know, it was new for me as a designer. So I think it extends itself to basically my fan and my customer base. And I think women will really enjoy it. But I think men will really enjoy it. We have lots of fun pictures in there through my Miss Louisiana years, along with the lesson. So it's definitely self-deprecating, and it's fun. It's got some fun stories and funny stories, but it also has these little lessons at the end of each chapter that you learn through life.
You know, sometimes people don't necessarily get past the outer exterior of a person, the outer shell, what they see or what they think they see. And this book will allow people to know that there definitely is brains behind the beauty.
Thank you.
And as you say, it is a lesson that a lot of people can learn. Rhonda, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
I thank you. I love this interview. I hope you send it to me. I want to post it everywhere.
I certainly will do that.
Thank you so much. And I enjoy the book.
Rhonda Shear, author of Up All Night, From Hollywood Bombshell to Lingerie Mogul, Life Lessons from an Accidental Feminist. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is number 0425, and you'll find links to Rhonda's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like, but the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. From the land that brought you maple syrup, poutine, ice hockey, and Pamela Anderson, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll celebrate the centennial of the NHL with a book featuring rare photos. Plus, this year's Ig Nobel Awards have been awarded. We'll talk about some of the winners with Mark Abrams. And we do indeed have an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on. Plus, of course, a lot more Stuff File news here on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, a car sat at the drive-thru at a McDonald's in Bath Township, Michigan for 15 minutes, the driver honking the horn and cursing, trying to get someone to take a food order. The restaurant was already closed for the night, the lights were off, and there was no one inside. The driver finally sped off in frustration, screeching the tires and driving over a curb. And how do we know all of this? A police officer was parked 20 feet away watching the whole scene. The unidentified driver was incredibly intoxicated, police say, and had wanted to order some McNuggets, a McDouble, and a McFlurry, but McFailed, and was then McJailed. What a blottoed McMoron. Two veteran sheriff's deputies were wounded in a shootout at a Rastafarian herb farm in Yuba County, California. Yes, that's exactly what it sounds like. And a local business announced a fundraiser to help them. But the sheriff's office isn't endorsing the event. If the event is run as explained, a spokesman conceded, it will be a legal business promotion. The business, City Limits Showgirls, invites drivers over 18 to pull into a tent on its property and have their cars washed by topless dancers, all for a fund established by a law enforcement union. The more you donate, said operations manager Hal Meyer, the more you can get. Wow. Get what? And from the girls or from the deputies? By the way, is that just a wash, or is waxing and polishing involved? Yeah. A passerby noticed something straight out of a horror film behind a mortuary in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Apparent blood seeping out of the ground and flowing into the gutter. City officials said the leak at the Green Oaks funeral home was indeed blood mixed with embalming fluid and was seeping from a storage tank. A spokeswoman for the National Funeral Directors Association assured the public such a leak could not be dangerous since the chemicals in embalming fluid inactivate those germs and pathogens. Still, the city plans to do something about it. We've been really concentrating on restaurants lately, so we haven't been looking into the funeral homes, admitted Baton Rouge Department of Environmental Services spokesman Adam Smith. but we're going to go ahead and get them signed up for a permit tomorrow. So much bureaucracy. Who knew a permit was necessary to store human blood in backyard tanks? Ooh. I'll bet you never thought of a story like this when you heard about concerns of what might happen with cutbacks to the EPA. Add this to your list of shocks and horrors. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a purported psychic who charged an elderly Massachusetts woman more than $3.5 million for exorcisms and spiritual cleansing has pleaded guilty to evading taxes. Federal prosecutors say 41-year-old Sally Ann Johnson of South Florida ran businesses that claimed to offer psychic readings and spiritual cleansing and strengthening. Between 2007 and 2014, prosecutors say a Martha's Vineyard woman paid Johnson more than $3.5 million for services that claimed to rid the woman of demons. Prosecutors say Johnson didn't report the income and tried to hide the money so she wouldn't have to pay taxes on it. Johnson pleaded guilty in the federal court in Boston and has agreed to repay the woman. She's expected to be sentenced in January. You know, over the years, we've had several stories dealing with so-called psychics who are charged with tax evasion. The irony here is they never really see it coming. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? If you're a fan of the NHL, then there is a book you'll want to add to your collection. It's called A Century of NHL Memories, Rare Photos from the Hockey Hall of Fame. And it features over 130 amazing photos selected from the archives of the Hockey Hall of Fame. It comes out just in time to celebrate the league's centennial, and it's put together by Phil Pritchard and Jim Hines. And Jim joins us on the line right now from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program, sir. This, as I said, is a spectacular book with amazing photos. I know you got the pictures from the archives of the Hockey Hall of Fame. And my first question has got to be, I'm sure there's a treasure trove of stuff there. How did you whittle it down to 130?
Well, that was the challenging part. And it was a kid in a candy store type scenario for an old hockey fan such as myself. So one of the things we did was, we always kept in mind that there's 100 years to cover here. And even though a lot of the selection and a lot of the striking stuff is old, we wanted to have a mix of the old and the new. And what we did was break this into themes so that this would be a little bit more manageable. So we broke it into 10 themes or 10 chapters, and then we picked from those what we thought were the best ones. We had a little bit different train of thought when it came to what we thought the best ones were. We really focused on photos people have never seen before. We do have quite a few that, you know, that you'd call classics that maybe the typical hockey fan has seen before. But our hope was that someone like me, who's in the hockey section of the bookstore all the time, has quite a big collection of hockey books. I think there are more like me out there, and we wanted to have something new for these people.
Okay, so you mentioned that you were looking at something a little different. What about between you and Phil Pritchard? Were there times when you disagreed as to what should or should not be in the book?
Not really. I mean, Phil Pritchard's involvement is that he's the curator, as well as the keeper of the cup. Phil's the guy that we see traveling around with the Stanley Cup all the time, the blonde fellow from TV commercials and who stands on the ice at the final game of the season and hands the cup out. I mean, the contribution from the Hockey Hall of Fame is to give us access to these and to allow us to publish these. So we got pretty good free rein. Sometimes people, you know where you might disagree is on, they have the members, right? The Hockey Hall of Fame members, the honored members, and they are very important to them. So maybe when I wanted to show an honored member smoking a cigarette, maybe that was one instance where they thought that wasn't a great idea because it looks bad, but we counter-argued that it's really different, it's original, and it's a sign of the times. So, well, we didn't have too many problems like that.
One of the things I noticed when I flipped through the book, and again, as I said, it's a beautiful book, is the fact that the older the pictures seem to be, you know that the players in those older pictures are young, but they don't really look young, do they?
It's funny. I say that all the time. These photographs in hockey, I mean, they're a mirror of our society, and they change. So, you know, just between 1967 and 1972, we still have guys with, you know, brush cuts in the original six era. And then, you know, hair gets a little longer, and guys start growing mustaches in the early 70s. But how many times did I look at this, and I look at the guy, and I see the brush cut and a dab of Brill Cream in the hair, and I think to myself, it looks like my dad playing for the, you know. It looks like my dad playing. When I look at Gump Worsley, I think it looks like my dad playing nets for the Minnesota North Stars or something.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up Gump Worsley, because I remember watching Gump as a kid, and he never looked like he was a young player.
Exactly. There's photos of him here in his early 20s, and he looks middle-aged.
Fascinating indeed. When you think of hockey fans, you think of the wide spectrum of people who are fans of the sport from all ages. Were you ever concerned that you might be locking into the nostalgic fan with a book like this, and it wouldn't necessarily resonate with a younger fan, you know, the kind of crowd who doesn't watch movies that are in black and white?
Maybe, but it is, this book is timed with the centennial of the National Hockey League, so it's a history book either any way you look at it. We did, when we chose the photos, like, I have a bit of a sense of humor that maybe I'm known for, and I will pick something that, or focus on something, or write a little something that's a little not typical of a sports book or something. So I'd like to think that sometimes some of these photos you might even laugh when you see them.
Hmm. Now, for instance, I'm looking through the pictures of the coaches, which is one of the sections. Mm-hmm. You have colorful coaches. And one of the things I think this book could also be great for hockey fans is actually starting a debate. For instance, let me ask you this. Who do you think the greatest coach is?
Oh, boy, I'm biased because I'm from Montreal. My dad grew up on the avenues in Verdun, and his brothers grew up with Scotty Bowman. I think Scotty Bowman, just not from his trophies, but from the way he managed games and what he did in hockey, is an example of a great coach. On the other side, people will say that he coached good teams and he had success with good teams. I also like a really colorful character like Roger Nielsen, who he came in at a time, probably started out in a time where hockey was still conservative and had been coached the same way for a long time, and he started introducing systems and using things like video to help his teams have success. I think he was even called Captain Video. So those just two examples.
Well, you know, you said you picked the first one with bias, and I had an answer in my head before I even asked the question. It just so happens we picked the same coach, and I don't even think mine is because of a bias, because I'm here in Montreal. I look at the what he did with teams to become successful, and I go back to the days when he coached the Blues, which were just basically decimated every year, four straight, by the Canadiens when they got to the finals. But to get a team like the Blues, which was essentially an expansion franchise, to where he got them to be creamed by the Canadiens, that says a lot.
You're absolutely right. I mean, the Las Vegas Knights have it easy, but what they did with expansion teams back in those days, they had a lot of old players and minor league discarded players. And Scotty Bowman didn't only take those Blues teams to those Stanley Cups against the Canadiens. He took them to two against the Boston Bruins, I think. At least one.
Yep. So there you go. For you, going through the archives, what was an oh wow picture for you?
An oh wow picture. There's one picture that I really love, and you know, some of these pictures, you wonder how realistic or real the situation was, and how much the photographer staged something. But there's a photograph of a Detroit Cougars player That was the team before they became the Red Wings, and it's from the late 1920s, a fellow named George Hay, and it's taken from an outdoor practice session. And you can see beautiful ice and wooden fencing and houses in the back of this photograph. I thought that was absolutely cool. Some other examples of things that struck me were those. We've dedicated a chapter here to the photographing the game. We called it shooting the game, and pictures of the photographers in action, or it's hard to believe in this day and age, on the ice, photographing a fight or an injured goalie as if it was a car accident. You know, those were different. Those jumped out at me.
One of the things I find so fascinating about the book are some of the older pictures, and certainly the pictures that predate me. And when I say older pictures, what catches me about the photographs themselves is the, for lack of a better term, lack of illumination in the rinks at the time. They weren't so brightly lit as they are today, where it's practically like daylight anytime you're anywhere near the ice at an arena, and you could see shadows and darker areas beyond where the cameraman's flash went off.
It's absolutely true, and it makes some of these photographs really magical and dark and mystical in some way. The photographers of that time were working with, you know, bare minimum. They had these big bulky cameras, and you know, the flashes were on the cameras. At one point, they managed to put them up in the corners of the rink, or mount them on the glass or the mesh that was there. And you know, they were basically stuck working in the corners of the rink. The first guys, when color photography came along in the 1960s, that's when they really needed to make a leap forward in terms of lighting, because the lighting they had at the time just did not cut it for color photography. So they started lugging in their own gear. Some of these fellows, like Harold Barkley, who worked a lot of games out of Maple Leaf Gardens, he would carry, you know, five suitcases of his camera, his flashes, a device that powered them. These guys were true pioneers.
It's an absolutely phenomenal book. It's a beautiful picture book, a century of NHL memories, rare photos from the Hockey Hall of Fame. Jim, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Really was my pleasure, Peter. Thank you very much.
Jim Hines, whose book is A Century of NHL Memories, Rare Photos from the Hockey Hall of Fame. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0425, and you'll find links to the book's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order it directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Have you heard the story about the guy who sued Winnebago over its cruise control? According to the story, he set the cruise control while driving and then left his seat to go brew some coffee. Of course, he crashed. And as the story goes, he was mad that the instructions didn't warn him not to do this, so he sued. If you've heard this, you're not alone. It's part of a viral email about five crazy lawsuits that received the so-called Stella Awards. The awards are named after the woman who spilled coffee on herself and sued McDonald's. The problem is, all these stories are fake. Yes, urban legends. It's easy to believe them, though, because so many real lawsuits are just as outrageous. Let's be fair, there's a better place for information about how junk lawsuits are affecting America than through phony emails. To get the facts, visit our website. The information we have is verified and proves once again that truth is indeed stranger than fiction. Our website is centerforamericatv.org.
If you're listening to this while walking with your iPod, make sure you look both ways before you cross the street. It's safety first on The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we will talk about the 2017 Ig Nobel Awards, plus we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way. I've got one more Stuff File news story I want to share with you before we get to our next guest, but I also want to mention a very subtle reminder. Okay, not so subtle. about my book, which is out. Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. It's available, boys and girls. And like the title says, within the pages, you'll find some of the celebrity encounters I've had with Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, or Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner, Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar, TV icons like Buddy Ebsen, Bob Denver, Gary Coleman, just to name a few, plus the two of the 12 men, who actually left their footprints on the moon. So check it out. It's available at Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, as well as at my publisher's website, which is BareManorMedia.com, and you'll find links to the book at our website at thestufffile.com. So buy the book. What are you waiting for? What? Anyway, back to the stuff file here, shall we? Police say a central Wyoming man they arrested for public intoxication claimed he had traveled back in time to warn of an alien invasion. Casper police say the man they encountered at 10:30 p.m. on Monday claimed he came from the year 2048. Reports state that the man told police he wanted to warn the people of Casper that aliens will arrive next year and that they should leave as soon as possible. He asked to speak to the president of the town, which is about 170 miles northwest of Cheyenne. The man told police he was only able to time travel because aliens filled his body with alcohol. He noted that he was supposed to be transported to the year 2018, not this year. So, aliens filled his body with alcohol. Oh, that's good. I mean, come on. You've got to give this guy points for creativity. There aren't many sober people who could come up with a far-fetched story like this. Kudos, pal. Kudos. Mind you, if he really was from 2048, my first question would be, do you have next week's lotto numbers? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? The 27th annual Ig Nobel Awards were recently announced. Each year, the Annals of Improbable Research puts on the event. So, who are the big winners for 2017? Time to find out. Mark Abrams is back on with us via Skype to talk about it. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Peter.
Always a pleasure to have you on the program. We haven't spoken for a couple of years, so it was nice to catch up with you. First of all, right off the bat, we should mention for those who haven't seen the awards or heard about the awards, one of the things that has changed over the years is it's now available on YouTube. It can be streamed. People can see it after the fact, correct?
That's right. And even during the fact, although it's hard to be during the fact after the fact.
Exactly. Okay, so right off the bat, anyone who listens to the show with any regularity knows I don't like cats. So you know which one I'm going to start with. Are cats a liquid or a solid? Who studied this and why?
This is a physics professor in France, and he saw a remark somewhere, somebody saying that cats really can be a liquid. And he started thinking about it, and he realized that for people who work in great detail trying to make sense of liquids and solids and all kinds of things, that there's a certain amount of truth there. And once you start looking at things that way, you can get a lot of insight into liquids and solids and what it means to flow and not. For example, a mountain. You might look at a mountain and decide that a mountain is solid. But if you were somehow to be able to stick around for, say, 20 million years and watch that mountain during that time, you would watch it slide and flow away. And so you might, over that period of time, think, well, you know, what is this difference between solids and liquids? It's not exactly what I thought.
Okay, so using that mountain analogy, how long would I have to stare at a cat to come to the same conclusion?
Tenth of a second.
Oh, is that all?
Or something like that, depending on what the cat's doing.
Wow. Now, I understand there are people who are disgusted by cheese. Again, why is this a study? Who discovered this?
This was done by some scientists in France, and all that they can say for sure from their observation is that there are some people in France who are disgusted by cheese. And these scientists took some brain images, you know, with very elaborate equipment. They've got images of the brains of people who say they're disgusted at cheese while these people were encountering cheese.
Well, that doesn't seem so odd or scientific?
It doesn't seem odd to you that we've chosen badly.
Well, no,
it should be very surprising.
It's just that I think there are a lot of people who are disgusted by cheese.
Yeah, that's probably so, and in some places more than others. Certainly in countries where you don't find cheese easily. But what these scientists were trying to figure out, still are trying to figure out, is what's going on inside the brain of somebody who's disgusted by cheese? What exactly is it that makes them feel disgusted? And it's a question that may never fully be answered.
Okay, so if we want to go into the realm of odd, how about maternal vagina music? That sounds like the oddest band name ever.
It's a pretty good contender, I guess. This is a team of doctors from, that's not doctors there. Let me turn off that noise-making machine. There. Team of doctors in Barcelona, in Spain, who showed that a developing human fetus responds more strongly to music that's played electromechanically inside the mother's vagina than to music that's played electromechanically on the mother's belly.
Wow. And how did one study this?
By playing music in...
Inside? YouTube.
Yes. They have a product also. It's called Baby Pod, which you can buy. And it will play music for you.
There have got to be some very adventurous women who were involved in the R&D process of this.
There were some women involved, yeah. I cannot speak firsthand about how adventurous they were.
Now, we have twins in my family. So the study that interested me is twins have trouble recognizing themselves in photos?
This was done by some scientists in Italy who showed photographs to a lot of sets of identical twins, photographs of one twin or the other. And they discovered that, for the most part, twins have great difficulty if they look at a photograph in figuring out, is that a photograph of me or of my twin?
Well, actually, that kind of makes sense in a way, because we're only used to seeing ourselves literally in a mirror image, in a mirror, and I know a lot of people who don't like looking at their own pictures because they don't feel it looks like them.
Yeah. How old are your twins?
Oh, they're adults now. One of them is a parent herself, so they're adults. They're in their 40s.
You might ask them how well they do if they look at a photograph, if they can tell who it's a photograph of.
Soon as I finish this interview, as a matter of fact, I'll call their mother, my sister, and find out too as well, because that to me is a really, really interesting one. Now, there's also something called an anti-smoking didgeridoo.
Not anti-smoking.
Anti-snoring, I should say.
Snoring, yes. Yeah. Snoring and smoking are not the same for most people. This is the Ig
Nobel
Peace
Prize. Well,
someone's
not doing it right then.
Yeah. This is the Ig Nobel Peace Prize this year. Went to a team of scientists from Switzerland, Canada, the Netherlands, and the USA. They're mostly based in Switzerland, and they demonstrated that regular playing of a didgeridoo, and a didgeridoo is that long, thin, tubular instrument from Australia, that by regularly playing a didgeridoo, somebody who has sleep apnea or snoring can get treated pretty effectively.
Now, you're saying that the person who does normally snore, they're the ones who has to play this, right? It's not like somebody plays
right.
It at night to them in their bed.
Right, right. And one of the team is himself somebody who suffered from those things and who plays didgeridoo and tried it for many years and now has made something of a business out of selling special didgeridoos to people and teaching them how to use it. And I can't say it's quiet, but it's quite an innovation.
I wonder if the same effect for people who play the bagpipes.
This is an interesting question.
This has been going on, as I mentioned in the introduction, for 27 years now. And I know we talked to you in the early going process of it. What is your thoughts of how this has grown and mushroomed and has really attracted so much international attention? And when I say attention, I'm talking about from media over the 27 years that this has taken place.
Well, let's see. What do I make of that? Yes, that's happened. I'm pretty happy about that. It's during that time we've been able to bring to the attention of the world a lot of things that individual people have done that are really surprising, inspiring in one direction or another, and that probably very few people would have heard about otherwise.
Because the thing I find fascinating about this, and again, I just today I saw another story about another Ig Nobel winner that showed up in my feed, and how serious this is now taken. I mean, I think I'm sure you're aware of the fact when you first started this that people thought, well, this is kind of a joke, and how can we take this seriously? But as time goes on, there is always something serious behind the levity of some of the things that are discussed and brought up at the Ig Nobel Prizes.
May I interrupt? Are you talking about the Ig Nobel Prizes, or are you talking about what's going on in the United States in general?
Oh, wow. That's deep. Oh, I was talking about the Ig Nobel Prizes, sir.
Okay.
But do you find that you know, people have taken it very seriously and are fascinated and look forward to it each year as to what you guys come up with?
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I hope so. We certainly look forward every year to finding out what we're going to discover. It's a big world out there. You know, there are what, several billion people, and it's hard to keep track of what all of them are doing. And probably every day, a whole bunch of them are doing kind of spectacular things. But how would anybody ever hear about most of them? So, you know, we've been happy to be able to find some of them and, raise them up to a place where everybody else can see what they're doing.
Now, people can find out more information by going to the website, which is www.improbable.com. And besides the actual awards, what will people find at the website?
You can find, so you can see videos of a lot of the Ig Nobel ceremonies. You also find the magazine, which is, I think, the best part of all, our magazine, The Annals of Improbable Research, where we have little reports about things like this, hundreds of things like this from around the world, and some of them recent, some of them going back that just didn't get noticed very much. You know, all sorts of things that make people laugh and then think. I also would like to say, anybody listening, if you know of somebody who deserves an Ig Nobel Prize or who we should write about in the magazine, get in touch with us, please.
And I concur, people should check out the website, if only for the magazine, because it's some fascinating reading. Mark, I thank you once again for being on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter.
Mark Abrams from the Annals of Improbable Research. They are the folks who put out the annual Ig Nobel Awards. You can find out more information by going to their website at improbable.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0425, and you'll find the links. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A Florida man who called 911 and threatened to kill a judge who ruled against him in a child custody case was arrested by the Volusia County Sheriff's Office. Deputies say 35-year-old Alan McCarty threatened to shoot Judge Stasia Warren, a 7th Judicial Circuit judge. McCarty is heard yelling at 911 dispatchers in four expletive-laced calls made that were released by the Volusia County Sheriff's Office. McCarty starts the first call saying he wants to report a crime that's about to happen. Oh, don't take my word for it. Listen to just part of the 911 call.
Communications, Warhurst.
Yeah, I want to report a crime that's about to happen.
What do you mean a crime that's about to happen?
Yeah, there's about to be a crime that's going to happen if my kids don't come back to me, you stupid. Because your stupid judges don't want to bring people to courtrooms. I got a gun pointed at your building.
Sir, what is going on?
Who the f*** are you calling, sir, you stupid b-? Don't call me names. You call me names, I'm gonna call you something. I ain't your f***, sir, you dumb f***. Where's your judge warrant at? You gonna bring that b- out in handcuffs and I'm gonna f- execute that f- right in the f- street.
Okay, where are you at?
You wanna f- with people getting custody of their kids? You wanna help f- with people getting custody of their kids? You wanna violate the American civil rights, you stupid f-? You want part of it too?
Okay.
Bring your f- out with
it. I can try to help you with?
Hey, yeah, bring your f- out. Bring that f- out of f- office. Do you hear me, you stupid f-?
Okay, I'm gonna disconnect the line, sir.
You gonna what? I'm letting you know I'm gonna shoot this f-. You gotta f- give me my kids.
Where are you at, sir?
Mother f-, I just told you I'm outside of her building waiting for her to get there in the morning. I'm gonna pop a f- cap in that f-, you stupid f-. Y'all wanna f- sabotage your man getting his rights to his kids, huh? That's what the f- law y'all are upholding, you stupid f-. I'll say it on the f- news with your judge's f- head below my knife. You stupid f-. Bring the f- out.
Okay, I don't know what building you're in front of.
Bring the f- out, you stupid f-.
Nice mouth on that guy. Oh, they found which building he was in, all right. Deputies traced the call to Northwest Florida. A courtroom deputy recognized McCarty's voice from another hostile message he left on the judge's assistant's phone in July, and analysts with the Volusia County Crime Center matched previous recordings. McCarty faces a felony charge of corruption by threat against a public service. McCarty is also accused of making threats against his ex-wife and her kids while a no-contact order was in place. Now, besides the fact that he clearly isn't Father of the Year, why, oh why, would you threaten to kill a judge by calling 911 when everyone on the planet knows those calls are recorded? One reason, and one reason only: you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0425. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0425. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Evolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. See you next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.